Hi, this is JJ, the Practical Alchemist. Here at UK Health Radio, we're hugely saddened by the loss at New Year of my co-presenter, Dr. Mark Goulston. But we hope that you'll appreciate the chance to hear once again one of our Hurt Less, Live More shows in honour of a special friend. Here it is now. Hello and welcome to Hurt Less, Live More with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, Dr. Mark Goulston. And this week we have a fantastic guest, Cheryl Utall, who is here to tell us all about some of her challenges that she's overcome in life. And that's what we're all about here. And Mark, you can probably give us a better introduction to Cheryl this week.
Yes, Cheryl and her co-founder partner, Lena Dakin, they were on my other podcast, and they were just terrific. And Cheryl is the co-founder and CEO of JAPA Health, J-A-P-A Health. She had a 10-year corporate career with senior roles in private equity, real estate development, management consulting, and she's owned two successful lifestyle businesses. And there's much more to her, and she was very successful in that sector. She had a deep personal experience that triggered a spiritual awakening. She healed herself from an autoimmune disease and trauma through shadow work, reprogramming her subconscious mind, and connection to her spirit. I want to hear more about that because, you know, a lot of people who have been successful transactionally in the world, they don't necessarily know what the heck spirit is. And she's passionate about natural healing, disease prevention, and human optimization. Cheryl, so good to have you here.
Thank you, Mark. It's good to see you and it's good to be here.
Thank you. And you and I have a lot in common there in terms of natural health and healing. So I'm looking forward to this conversation with you. Tell us what you've overcome here and what's brought you to where you are now.
What have I overcome? Well, I think that if I'm trying very hard in this moment to summarize it and make it concise to start this conversation in a way that's compelling for people to relate to, I overcame the subconscious small self that was running my life and continuously attracting pain into my life unconsciously. And that was also making me physically sick. And it wasn't until I hit what was my personal rock bottom through what I refer to as the dark night of the soul, which I'm sure you know what that means. It wasn't until I really experienced that, that the pain that I was experiencing forced me to examine the patterns in my life and how I was showing up in a way that forced me, like really deeply forced me, which was not easy and took a couple of years to take deep-seated responsibility for everything that had happened to me. And there was one day that I actually remember waking up and having this realization that I can't blame anybody else. And it was like, you know, a long journey to that point of peeling back all the layers of who I am and what I believe and what's been governing my life and what the common denominator was in all of the painful experiences, because there were actually many. And when I tell this story, I don't want pity. You know, I don't want people to say, oh my God, she suffered so much. I feel bad for her. Like that's actually not at all what I want people to take out of the story that I share. It's one of deep empowerment. And I remember the day when I woke up and felt that. And I remember the day when I woke up and felt like, you know, I can't blame my parents. I can't blame my ex-husband. I can't blame my boss. I can't blame the doctors. And that I am the common denominator. And that if I'm radically honest with myself about how I show up and the energy and the signal that I'm broadcasting out into the world, then I know I can't blame anybody else. And that I think has been the deepest lesson of my life. And what we were talking about just offline a moment ago about, you know, vulnerability and authenticity, I think is really the medicine that the world truly deeply needs, that the collective truly deeply needs, especially in light of what's happening this week and the current events in the world, is that we're really, I think, deeply at war with ourselves. And when we're no longer having a spiritual war with ourselves, then we can find peace and we can find healing within ourselves. And that's when we can shift, and this has been my experience, from the victim consciousness to that of creator consciousness and love and deep peace and open-heartedness. And we can find the ability to heal our physical ailments as well as the spiritual ailments of that inner, those inner wounds that I don't think anybody gets through life without. And I hope that answers the question.
No, I think it does very well. I think it does very well. Thank you.
Cheryl, let me ask you something. We had a guest on, and she shared with me this notion that I think she's right. She said, if you can identify what you're feeling, you know, reach down as deeply as you can underneath the anger, underneath the blame, underneath the whatever. And if you can identify what the feeling is and then feel it as completely as possible, it dissipates in less than 90 seconds. I mean, and I think she's right because, you know, like I'm going through some challenges and every now and then I'll get a wave of sadness and I just lean into it. It's not depression. It's not feeling sorry for myself. It's just a wave of sadness. And, you know, in less than 2 minutes, it's I'm getting through it. And I'd be interested in both of your input about, it's one thing to identify a feeling, but what do you think enables people to actually feel it?
And then feel it and then take responsibility. You see, I think the responsibility piece that Cheryl's talking about there is huge as well in terms of moving forward and healing from whatever pain you've been going through, either self-inflicted, subconsciously or otherwise. But I think there has to be a fearlessness to enable you to feel, truly feel. What do you think, Cheryl?
I resonate with that because I think that the fear for me comes from when I give up my power to it. Mm. So when I feel powerless over whatever that emotion is, like I have no control over it, like I don't have the ability to shift it, that's when I'm not really able to feel it. That's when I resist it because I'm afraid of it.
Yeah.
But if I know that it's fleeting, it's an energy, and I have the power to shift that. And I remember all of the tools that I have. And I remember all of the times where something felt very overwhelming or very uncomfortable, but it was temporary. Then it brings me back into a place within myself of my own personal power.
Yeah. And the more that you practice that, the easier it becomes. So the less time things like that hang around, you're able to.
I totally agree. Yeah. You can get stuck. I think, you know, I've been on this spiritual path and this journey towards healing and you know, peace within myself for quite a long time now. Like we're pushing 20 years of this journey. And I have to say that I'm better and better and better at it all the time, but I'm not perfect either. Mm-hmm. And I still get triggered and I still succumb to like low vibration thoughts and feelings, and I still sometimes victimize myself, but yes, definitely I'm able to shift much more quickly these days than I had in the past. No doubt about that.
So for both of you, unpack the word shift. What goes on? Is it something in your head? Is it where you, instead of picking up speed and racing away from it or reacting to it? Because I think a lot of listeners and a lot of people who aren't as psychologically or spiritually minded as maybe the three of us value that to be, can you unpack what goes on to shift it from reacting to letting it breathe or whatever? And then, again, taking responsibility, but what goes on in the shift?
What goes on in the shift is a remembering first and foremost, of the fact that it's part of the journey and part of the process, right? And just to acknowledge it, honor it, remember that it has purpose. And then for me, because emotions are energy in motion, it's to shift my attention to my breath. Remember, you know, just the simple things about breathing and moving energy, even going for a walk or getting on my yoga mat, doing my practice, whatever those tools are that I have. And for everybody, they're different. Like on the podcast I was on last week, the person I was talking to was talking about how tapping has worked so well for her. But that's not one of my go-to practices. You know, I have different practices, and I think that's so important to know what they are for you, to explore them all and to find the ones that, you know, really can be powerful for you, that, you know, are like your toolkit. And so what goes on for me in the shift is, number one, remembering that I'm having a low vibration experience, right? Like, okay, acknowledge it. And then just come back to my breath, remember who I am, remember my power, reach in my toolbox and start to do the things. Just start to do the things, even when I don't want to do the things, right? Like, it's not about always being motivated to do them, but the dedication and the devotion to the path of joy and constantly coming back and making that choice that I have the power within me to shift this.
And what about for you, JJ?
Yeah, it's a very simple thing for me. First of all, allow yourself to feel it and not shy away from it. That's obviously the first step. So you allow yourself to feel it, and then recognizing it's not really me. It's not part mm-hmm. of me. I just allow it to go. And it's a physical thing. I can actually feel it in my body. I can feel my body releasing the emotion and letting it flow out. And then it just dissipates. And I move on. Don't even give it another thought. Just move on. Now, that's after a lot of practice in doing that and being able to just say, yeah, that's not me.
Right.
I said to a friend the other day, funnily enough, I said, is it wrong for me to feel so much schadenfreude about something? And I said, but it didn't last very long. She said, no, of course it didn't last very long, because, you know, you're good at letting these things go now. I was joking, but I recognized that I did feel a certain amount of, ha, that'll serve you right. You know, somebody then thought, that's not really a great thing to think. That's not really a great emotion, but it's human. Mm-hmm. But then I just let it go and moved on, because it didn't really matter. It didn't really mean anything to me. So it is just an acknowledgement, a facing it and acknowledging it, and then a letting go and saying, no, it's not me. Doesn't have to affect me at all. Off you go. Bye.
When you got into this, the initial reaction, that'll serve you right. You know, it's your own fault, whatever. Is that anything like any of the voices of either of your parents?
A phrase that would often be heard in my childhood is, that'll teach you. That'll teach you. You won't do that again.
and do you remember what your... You know, because I think we're reaching out for some sort of comfort, because we feel like we're falling apart, and inside it feels like it wants to explode. And so we're reaching out for something other than, that'll teach you. Do you remember what your reaction or response was to the, that'll teach you?
I don't really know. I don't think that, I can't think of anything right off the top of my head. If I think into it, then maybe... I don't know about that, or no, that's not fair kind of thing. Maybe. I don't know. But it's not really something that I think about too much.
I thought about that actually a lot. I actually have spent quite a long time in deep contemplation of that, because, and I have known nothing, JJ, about your relationship to your parents, but, you know, for many people, I think that it's relatable to have a lot of resentment and challenges around making peace with your parents, which has been a long journey for me. And around that, I felt a lot of contraction physically. Right. So, Mark, when you ask JJ that question, I instantly know how those kinds of experiences that she had that you were asking about have felt for me. And it feels like a holding my breath, a deep contraction. You know, when you feel emotions kind of welling up inside of you and you might have the urge to cry and you get like that lump in your throat, you know, or like a pit in your stomach, right? It's that. It's like a version of that where I can feel the energy stuck in this place in my body that just feels like sick. It feels sick that we now, of course, we know that energy that you don't process, that you repress and suppress, does in fact make you physically sick. And so those kinds of experiences where like I'm judging an emotion or I'm identifying with the emotion does make me feel contracted.
Yeah.
And I think we call that a trigger.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's when we're triggered, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. And yes, there is a certain amount of contraction. That's if I, you know, put my focus on it, which I'm not used to doing, then yes, that would be part of it. That kind of,
yeah.
You know, the sort of inward inhalation of breath and that contraction. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, we're coming up to a break. So let's carry on with this. I think it's fascinating. Let's carry on with this conversation in a few moments, right after this from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with Nasal Guard for pet lovers. Nasal Guard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair, and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try Nasal Guard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Hurt Less, Live More here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ, the practical alchemist, Dr. Mark Goulston, and our wonderful guest today, Cheryl Utile. And we were talking before the break about how we contract sometimes. And Mark, I think you wanted to share an anecdote about that.
Yeah. So I'll try not to be verbose, which is a challenge for me. So many years ago, I trained at UCLA and it had one of the leading eating disorders programs in the country. And it was rough. I mean, if you were going to die, if you were like literally going to die, they would tube feed you. I mean, they couldn't let you die. And I remember it was a weekend and I was on call in the emergency room and this young woman came in and she was skin and bones. And it was clear that she needed to be admitted to the inpatient unit. So I called up and, you know, and I went through a brief kind of thing. And they said, it's not going to be ready for a while. And there was no one behind her. And so rather than turning her over to the nurses, something compelled me to do this exercise with her. And at UCLA, we had a bunch of, in those days, training in addition to psychopharmacology. I mean, we had guided imagery, you know, hypnosis. And so I said to her, I said, can we try something? And I hope it'll help you relax. And, you know, and if it doesn't, you know, then just say, you know, this is not helping and feel free and stop me. And she said, sure. And I said, put your legs up in the chair in front of you, and I'm going to count to 10. And, you know, and I want you to be you know, breathing more and more deeply. And I said, are you right-handed or left-handed? She said, right-handed. I said, I want you to put your left hand on your stomach. And as I'm counting, I want you to hear that the left hand is the hand of the mommy you always wanted and needed. And we're not here to bash your parents, but this, the left hand is the mommy you always wanted and needed. And what the left hand is saying to you is, I'm here and I'm not going anywhere. And I want you to feel the warmth of that left hand on your stomach. And with each breath, it's, I'm here, I'm not going anywhere. And then, you know, we got counting to, I guess, 10. And then I said, now I want you to put your right hand over your left hand. And that's the daddy you always wanted. And what the daddy is saying to you and your mommy is, I'm here and I'm not going anywhere. And we're going to get through this. You're going to be okay. And I want you to go back and forth. And I'd say, focus on the left hand. And it's your mommy saying, I'm here, I'm not going anywhere. And the right hand is your dad reassuring your mommy and you, saying, I'm here too, and we're going to get through this. You're going to get better. And we weave back and forth. And, you know, she was a very controlled person, but if you can imagine, her eyes are closed and tears are dripping down the side of her eyes. And she's taking deep breaths. I mean, as I recall it, I'm starting to take the deep breaths that she took. You know, and then I got a signal that the bed is ready and they're going to be coming down. And so we did this a little bit more. And then the nurse signaled, you know, they're here to take her upstairs. And I said, I'm going to count back from 10 to 1. And when we get to 2 or 3, you're going to start blinking your eyes open. And you can remember everything we talked about or none of it. It doesn't matter. There's no way to fail. And you can remember how it felt. Or you can forget it. It doesn't really matter. There's no way to fail. So I counted back from 10, and then at 2, she's blinking her eyes open, you know, and her, and there's tears on either side. And then the people came into the room saying, well, we need to take her upstairs. And I looked at her and I said, you are going to get better. And she looked at me. So imagine this. She said, is the cafeteria still open? Because I am starved.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have shared that one with us before now, but I am really curious to hear how Cheryl feels about that.
Oh, emotional. So many things come up for me, and Mark has such a beautiful way of reaching into people's hearts, doesn't he?
Yes.
So many things come up for me, because in my journey towards and through the pain that I was in, so much inner child's healing had to take place. So much forgiving of my parents had to take place, and so much understanding, like JJ was talking about before, that, you know, the pain and the emotions, like, they weren't mine, right? And, you know, recognizing that that's all normal, you know, that we all go through it. It's like this universal process, and we're really, really sensitive to it. So to have this acknowledgement that your parents had their own wounds and have actually really deep compassion for them, because if they pass that on to you, it means that they themselves never had the opportunity to heal from it. And that for me was incredibly liberating, incredibly liberating. And so let me tell you a little bit about my father. So my father is a compulsive gambler and a very sick man and a very miserable man who I have not spoken to in something like 13 years. And I've heard recently he's not doing well at all in his life, which is not a surprise. And there was a long time in my life where I was very angry with him. And a long time in my life that the programs, right, the ideas and the beliefs that infected his mind like a virus also infected me. And I was so angry and I felt trapped by that. And part of the awakening that I had was the recognition that I have power over that and I can choose to unlearn and relearn, and that I can also forgive. And I can have compassion for him and the fact that he didn't do that for himself for whatever reason in this lifetime. And then to have deep gratitude for my ability to see that And that has given me, and I'm so grateful for it, the ability to have compassion for others, because I feel that for myself and for my, you know, my own process around that, of not getting the love that I needed, of not getting the feeling of safety that I needed, of not feeling like I was enough. And I think the deepest wound that came from him, especially, you know, as a gambler, there's this, you know, hyper materialism. There's this focus on stuff, right? There's this focus on money and of not having enough and of being in scarcity all the time and of everything being about the material and not being about love or spirit or connection, which is really all that matters. And the deepest wound that I had around that was around materialism. And what came up for me a lot when you told the story of this young female was, because I had similar issues. I mean, I didn't have an eating disorder, but I think that a lot of times we take it out on our bodies. We look to our bodies as a mechanism of control for our own process of whatever that is, you know, whether it's to inflict pain on ourselves because we don't feel like we're worthy, if it's trying to change our shape because we think that by changing our bodies and changing our appearance, it's going to create a different life, a different experience, in a way to escape the pain that we're in. I resonate with that and that girl's journey. My experience was different. The biggest catalyst of my spiritual awakening was that I chose to have plastic surgery as a young girl, and it turned out horribly. And for a long time, I blamed the doctor, and I thought about my parents and how much emphasis they placed on appearance and on materialism. And I was really stuck in that loop of victimhood. And it wasn't until I realized that I made that choice to do that, and that the lesson out of that was that I wished I had loved myself enough without needing to make that change. And that once I came to that understanding, well, can I just love myself now? If that's what I wished I would have done, let's just do it now. And that was the beginning of the rest of my life, really, of being able to say, like, okay, I forgive them for all of the pain that they were in because they didn't know. But now I know because I've learned. And so now I'm going to make the commitment to show up in love with myself, the body, the journey, all of it, every single day. And it was really hard to get to that place. It was not an easy process. In fact, from the moment that it happened until the actual letting go and alchemy of all of the pain, and, you know, how long it took me to process all of that was 2 years.
Yeah. And that safety, you know, had issues with my parents, as Mark knows very well, and had to deal with that lack of safety, the feeling that I was never really properly safe. And yeah. I would look at other families and think, that's not my experience. That was never my experience, right? And not that anybody was terribly abusive, you know, I just didn't feel safe.
Yeah, same.
And that's a deep thing to shift. That's a deep thing to let go of. And it's taken me a long time to get to the place where I actually feel safe, no matter what is going on around me. And you're right. I mean, the understanding that they were in pain too, they never had the kind of help that we've had. Just forgiving that too, and just understanding that. Yeah. Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, that's been huge for me, you know, just shifting my perspective of my parents from being my parents to being people too, and people that, you know, went through their own journey of difficulty with whatever tools that they had at the time, and having deep empathy and compassion for them has been so liberating for me. I wish that for everybody. I really do. As a matter of fact, Mark mentioned Japa Health, which is the startup, the technology that I built, which is an assessment. Really, it's an assessment that that I've designed that helps people through the process of asking questions identify where they might be feeling stuck in their lives. And then we have a machine learning recommender engine that delivers recommendations for people based on their responses to the questions. And it's quite lengthy, and it seeks to offer conscious resources for people, right? So I'm not going to tell anybody what to do or how to do it, but these are resources that can be explored depending on what it is that you're experiencing. And one of the questions that we ask is, do you resent your parents? And that's a big one. And, you know, holding on to resentment, like holding on to any negative emotion, will make you sick.
Oh yeah.
And it will continue to attract more experiences that reinforce that until you let it go.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, for years, I left home very young, and for years would say I hated my father.
I know, me too. I know.
But luckily that was resolved later in life. And before he passed, I felt completely differently towards him. So that was healed. Yeah.
Good. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, it had to happen. Otherwise, you know, it just eats you up inside, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? Yeah, it really does. It really does. And there's no better feeling than making peace with that. And just, I mean, the process of acceptance, deep, deep, deep seated acceptance, it's not an easy journey.
No.
But it's necessary.
Yeah. And also recognizing him for what he did achieve and what he did do. And
yes. Yes.
And not for the things that he didn't do, which led to me resenting him. Yeah. Very important.
Both. Yeah. Yeah. Both. And I do the same too. Like, there's so many wonderful things that I did learn from my dad. So many things that have shaped who I am for the positive as well. So yeah. I do really resonate with that too.
I love it. I love it. And that brings us to yet another break. I can't believe how quickly this show is going. But it is time for another break right now. We'll be back right after these messages, once again, from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio, with me, JJ, the practical alchemist, Dr. Mark Goulston, and our wonderful guest, Cheryl Utal. And we were talking about parents and forgiveness before the break. And Mark, I think you wanted to step in again.
Yeah. So it's too late for you, JJ, with your father, because he's died. Too late for me. And I've shared this on previous shows that there was a quote that I is the top quote I've ever heard, and I collect quotes. And it was from Dr. Shani Duperon in Project Forgive with Desmond Tutu. They nominated with Nobel Prize. And the quote was, "Forgiveness is accepting the apology you will never receive." So when she said that, I applied that to my father, who had died 25 years earlier. And I imagine him saying from, you know, the healthy part of him underneath the highly critical part of him that, you know, remember when I used to put you down and you'd come up with one of your cockamamie ideas and, you know, and JJ's smiling, saying, yeah, Mark's dad, I know about all his ideas. And I imagine him saying, I was talking about myself. I was very limited and rigid. Mm-hmm, and you'd come up with a crazy idea and I'd put you down because you scared me. Because I was good with numbers, I wasn't good with connecting with people. And then I imagine him saying, and I don't deserve you as my son for all the good that you've done in the world. And so I imagine that down deep underneath whatever his pathology was, that he would say that. But here's the thing that I want to share with you, Cheryl, because if he was alive, I realized after I accepted his apology that I needed to apologize to him. And what I would have said to him, well, here's what it would be, and you could still do this. You could say, well, I accept your apology that underneath, you know, all the stuff that made you act the way you did, I've held, and my apology to him is, I realize that I've held a grudge against you. I've had a chip on my shoulder against you. I've used you as an excuse in a lot of times. And really, I want to apologize because I was afraid to get close to you because you traumatized me deeply. You wounded me deeply. And I'm still on a journey healing from it. And I don't want to give you a second bite at the apple. Mm-hmm. I haven't fully healed from it. I've done pretty well. I've gotten past it and I've gotten kind of over it. And so I'm keeping you at a distance because of how deeply traumatizing it was, the way you acted in these ways. And I'm afraid to let you get close and re-traumatize me. It's taken me years to get where I am now. And I'm sorry I've been so afraid to be in contact with you because I just don't want to mess around with being re-traumatized. And look, if you're heading towards the end of your life, I don't wish you to burn in hell. You know, I wish you to find peace or something. But what I realized is it wasn't, this is my own shtick. It wasn't until I apologized that I was free because I don't, we all have a Jungian shadow. I don't like the victim, bitter side of me that still lives inside me. And when it gets awakened, I think less of myself, except I say, Mark, everybody has a shadow. As long as you don't act on it and hurt anyone, you're good to go. So, you know, stop beating yourself up for that because everybody has this shadow. But I don't like that part of me, the bitterness, the grudge holding. I really hate it when I play the victim card, even in my own head. And, and I'll try and be like that young anorectic girl and I'll come in and I'll say, Mark, you're doing it again. You're playing the victim card. I thought you said you didn't like it. Yeah, you're doing it. But I do it in a very loving way. I'll reach inside and I'll say, do you want to let it go? You know, because you don't like being the victim. And it sort of heals things, but I'm just sharing it with you because I'd like to think that if my dad was alive, I could say something like, I didn't get close to you because I was afraid you could re-traumatize me. And then, and I didn't want to take a chance.
I think it depends. I think I understand where you're going with that. And I think it depends. I think, I have come to understand having boundaries and energetically disconnecting can sometimes be too rigid, but can also be just exactly what you need. And I think, discerning for yourself whether or not it serves you to go in that direction and to offer that apology, and to, you know, make that clear and make that known, and to really sit with that and, you know, contemplate whether that's the right thing or whether it is to, uphold the boundary and not make contact. It's a very personal decision, and there's no right or wrong decision.
I'll make a terrible joke because I only make terrible jokes, because you're right. It's, because he's been dead for 27 years, he can't mess up my apology, because if he was alive and I said that to him, and I'm hoping for some reconciliation, and he'd say, and if he said to me, "So what?" I'd say, "What the heck did I do this for?"
Yeah. You know, and so to know, like, you know, in my case, the level of mental illness and toxicity that's there, it wouldn't even be understood.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, but it doesn't go without contemplation. It's something that I have considered and contemplated, especially recently when, you know, I heard what I heard about his situation. It's so important, I think, to have clarity within yourself about what you can live with around how you make peace. And I've made so much peace around that, and I pray for him. And I pray for everybody that's in that situation that hasn't healed, but that has inflicted pain on others. And for me, that gives me comfort and peace, knowing that my prayer and my compassion and my forgiveness in my heart is enough for me.
Amended and accepted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The apology that I didn't get is okay. It's okay.
Yeah, and I think I kind of did get some kind of apology from my father before he passed over. He had dementia towards the end. And I think when people, this is what I've seen in people who go through the dementia process, there's a point where they almost become really themselves, where they almost become, all the filters have gone, and they are just them. And I remember having a conversation with my father when he was at that point. I think he was at that point. And it was kind of an apology. He was saying things like, I know I haven't done things right. I've made mistakes in my life. And then he said, but you don't have to, you can do better. And that was a huge thing for me. And, you know, I don't remember him telling me that often when I was a child that he loved me, but he could do at that point, because all the filters had fallen away from him and he could just be him. And that was a huge healing for both of us, paradoxically, because he was going through dementia.
So I got to share a tearjerker with you. I just remembered this. I have no idea if it relates, but we'll all get a good cry out of it. Sting was talking about visiting his dad when his dad was, you know, and I don't know what the relationship was. And he was talking about reaching out and holding his dad's hands. And he said, our hands really looked exactly the same. Mm. And he was talking tenderly to his dad. And he would say, Dad, look at our hands. They're exactly the same. And his dad said to him, but you could do so much more with yours.
Aww.
I told you there wouldn't be a dry eye in the audience.
Do you believe that you choose your parents? From a spiritual perspective, do you believe that? I mean, that's something that I believe it. Some people believe that.
I used to. I'm not so sure anymore. But I used to believe that. But my mother and I used to joke that I was an alien who somehow came in, you know, by mistake. That wasn't part of my growing up trauma. That was me acknowledging that I was not quite like everybody else in the family, and her acknowledging that as well. But these days, not so sure whether it's a soul choice as such. I don't know. Mm. I don't know about that. Yeah.
You know, something I've used, and you may or may not know about this, Cheryl, but JJ does, and we've talked about, I'm facing mortality. And I've been talking openly about it. And one of the things that gave me peace is I realized that dying isn't happening to me. It's happening for me. And it's giving me the opportunity to become aware of all these things that living never was able to. And so I'm sharing as fast as I can, you know, what it's helping me become aware of. So you don't have to be dying to become aware of these things. And maybe they can help your life. But if we can apply that to our parents, you know, instead of feeling like that victim, I've been traumatized. If, like, for instance, I think my parents, especially my dad, happened for me. Because in realizing the hurt of being someone who is not capable of empathy and more capable of criticism, I could feel that hurt and the healing power of being empathic and compassionate.
Yeah.
I think it's defined my life. And I think it saved a few lives along the way. And so, I mean, if I had a more healthy kind of thing and maybe instead of whose life can I save today, I could say, oh, should I go out and play tennis? I think I'd rather save a life.
You mean being empathic, which is, I think, a byproduct of having hypercritical parents.
Totally.
And
it's one of my deepest values that I take pride in. You know, you're reasonably empathic, Mark.
Yeah. You are deeply empathic. I resonate with that. There was a book that a therapist recommended for me once called The Drama of the Gifted Child. Are you familiar with that book?
Oh, yeah.
It
was a cult classic. It was by Alice.
Really changed my life, man.
Yeah. And to our listeners, what it means is the woman, it was either, I think Alice Miller or Alice Walker. I mixed them up. But the idea is that what it was talking about is the drama of the overly sensitized child. And because what happened is we spent our lives trying to make our parents whole so they could finish the job of raising us as healthy parents. Mm-hmm. And we never could pull it off. And so we often pivoted to becoming therapists
healers in some way, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so true.
Because we become so attuned. We have to become so attuned in that environment that we cultivate a deep sensitivity to the whole spectrum of emotions. And that then enables us to hold space for other people, to recognize what they're going through. And it has been a big part of my life as well, to be empathic and to apply all these things that I've learned through my own journey to helping others. So it is a bit of a superpower. But something else came up for me just now when you were talking, Mark, about mortality. Can I share?
Yeah, please do.
So, Mark, you know this, and JJ, maybe you read about it when you were looking me up, that I'm a very devoted student of yoga. And so many people are unclear about what yoga really is, especially in the West. We have this sort of relationship to yoga and exercise, which it is a beautiful exercise. You know, it's got wonderful physical benefits, but it is a philosophical system that has outlined so many universal truths in the human condition that it is something that I think everybody can relate to and is a beautiful blueprint when studied and understood for overcoming life's challenges. And it's a system that's many thousands of years old. And in our lives, we focus so much on, how do we shift our mindset to be happy? And what are the things that we need to do to be happy? Or what are the things that we need to do to be healthy? And there's an entire industry now around like mindset work, which is kind of awesome. But I think where we can learn a lot from yoga philosophy that I don't think is focused on enough are the obstacles that have been well documented. And in yoga philosophy, they're called the kleshas, and there are five of them. And, you know, one of them is ignorance of the true self. One of them is delusion, incorrect knowledge. Laziness is another one, just being lazy. But one of them is fear of death. Abhinivesha. The very last one is the fear of death. And I think that, you know, you said you're facing mortality, but aren't we all facing mortality? And the idea is to honor and acknowledge as part of your practice, as part of your life, that you're going to die. Because we're all going to die. No one's getting out of here alive. But to do it in a way that enables you to actually live.
Well,
that's the whole point.
I think that's perfect. And it's a perfect way to bring the show to an end. In fact, we are at that point. And also, let's just say again, your website is Japa Health.
It's japa.health.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Japa.health. And there's an assessment on the website. It's free for anybody to take. It's free for now. That might change in the near future. At the end of the assessment, there's some beautiful gifts, absolutely beautiful, beautiful gifts about how to manage and balance all the forces that create health and vitality.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I'll have to have a look. Mark, final word.
Well, you know, one of the things I say to myself is, you know, Mark, everyone who's ever lived has died. If they can do it, you can do it.
Well, there we are. So on that note, from me, from Mark, and from our guest today, Cheryl Utah, that's all for now. Thanks for listening, and hopefully you'll join us again. Goodbye for now.